From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Returning ex-prisoners face a steep climb back into society. Some of the challenges they face may grow out of how they're treated in the criminal justice system. Today we meet two Open Society Institute Baltimore community fellows working to improve those experiences. Janae Gorwal's project, Remind, will train defense attorneys to advocate better on behalf of clients who suffer from mental health issues. And Emily Thompson's project, Pivot, addresses the gap in reentry services for female ex-offenders.
The bigger picture goal for Pivot is to kind of shift the way that society is looking at incarcerated women, because there is so much stigma that ends up following women for their whole life, and it takes such a toll on their children.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. After they've been in prison, returning citizens often face many challenges, including barriers to finding work or adequate housing. And if it's been a long incarceration, family relationships can be affected. Our guest today has focused her work on that population with even more precision, women who are returning from prison. To do that, one of the Open Society Institute Baltimore 2018 Community Fellows, Emily Thompson, will establish the Pivot Program. It's a comprehensive reentry program for women returning to Baltimore City from the criminal justice system. With this initiative, she intends to address the gap in services for ex-prisoners who are female. Thompson is one of 10 fellows who will each receive $60,000 over 18 months to work full-time developing a project. The nonprofit Open Society Institute funds projects to improve lives in underserved communities, from addressing addiction to mentoring young people. Welcome to On the Record, Emily.
Thank you.
You've done a pilot already. Explain how Pivot works.
Yes. So Pivot is a community reentry program that brings resources that already exist in Baltimore City directly to women who are coming home from incarceration. One of the things that we found when we started creating Pivot was that there were a bunch of resources that existed, but they're extremely difficult to find, especially when you first come home and you don't have transportation, you have very little money, maybe you don't even have a cell phone, certainly not internet access necessarily. And so navigating, getting around to 15 different agencies to get the things you need to reestablish yourself can be very challenging. So Pivot brings together all the resources that women need to get their lives back together.
And what are some of those resources?
Yeah, so those include things like medical care, mental health support. We have parenting classes in our pilot, and we'll continue to do that as we grow. Financial education, job readiness, and really kind of like taking everything you need holistically to get back on your feet, get back into society, and also combining that with a mentorship component. One of the things that we found was that women were coming back without a strong network of support, and maybe going back to some of the communities where they were getting in trouble with friends and before they were incarcerated. So bringing in a new community and social structure for the women, being around positive influences.
Tell me about what kind of mentoring will go on.
One of the things that is most special about Pivot for me is the fact that we're bringing women together from all walks of life to go on this journey. It's not just women who are in reentry coming in for a service. It's really building a new community and social support network around these women. And we're bringing women together from the business community, we're bringing in peers who have actually experienced incarceration themselves and have now gotten back into society and are serving as peer coaches and mentors. We're bringing in women from the faith community, from all different places, to just support one another and get to know one another. I think that's so important because there can be a lot of, there's a lot of stigma that, you know, I mentioned earlier that follow these women. And so to see on both sides that we are very different, but we're also very similar. And so I think that was really powerful in our pilot program. We had some incredible relationships that formed. And that was one of the things that the women said was most important for them, was having those community sisters there.
How do you identify the women to work with?
For the pilot program, we actually worked with the Northwest Reentry Center at Mondawmin, which is part of the Mayor's Office of Employment Development. So men and women who are coming back from incarceration are using that reentry center to look for employment. And they expressed to us a real need to have more targeted services for women. So we were able to set up like a little station there and do some recruiting and meet a lot of women, talk to a lot of women there who were looking for more support. So we got our pilot women from that location. And then moving forward, we'll be working with the Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services to actually recruit before women are released, which is the ideal time so that when they come out, they have a place to go and a plan.
A place to go and a plan. And
yes.
What do they do? How often do they meet? How do they come together? How does it work?
So the women meet 5 days a week at Pivot, and we do Monday through Friday to simulate your regular kind of work week. And each day is a different focus area. So one day we focus on job readiness. Another day would be health and wellness. Another day would be parenting. Another day is financial literacy. And we brought in, for the pilot, we brought in partners from across the city. We worked with Living Classrooms. We worked with Johns Hopkins on the medical workshops. We worked with PNC Bank for financial literacy, and all kinds of different women in business and women who, entrepreneurs who came in and spoke to, taught workshops for our participants on starting their own businesses. We really tried to just provide a 360 degree view on what their options were when they got home.
And that program is 5 weeks long?
The pilot program was 5 weeks. What we learned from the pilot program, we did a lot of kind of recapping and debriefing with them to learn how we could make it better for the next time. And everybody wanted it to be longer. They really didn't want it to end. They were like, this is my safe place. I'm not ready to go back out quite yet. So we are extending, for our next group, we're going to be extending it to 8 weeks. And we also have ongoing alumni support. So every woman gets a check-in call once a week to make sure that she's maintaining her employment, still, if there are any other referrals or, you know, if she has any other medical needs that pop up, that we can be there to kind of smooth that transition for a year.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with Emily Thompson, an Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellow. Her project is called Pivot, a reentry program for women returning to Baltimore City from the criminal justice system. Give us an idea of the scope of the female prisoner population in Maryland. What are the numbers?
Women are the fastest growing population in the correction system today. The number of women incarcerated has grown by over 800% in the past decade and is far surpassed the growth rate of the male prison population.
But there's still a lot fewer women in prison than
there
men.
There are still fewer women than men, but the numbers are growing much faster, which is a big area of concern, especially when you see that many of the women are incarcerated for things like domestic violence cases or drug or alcohol-related offenses, where we see, for example, one of the women in our program was incarcerated for a DUI, and she had a 5-week-old baby when she was incarcerated, and she was put away for 18 months. And just the toll that that took on her, on her family, on her child, being able to shift the way that our society is viewing that type of crime, rather than putting a woman away, looking at other options like rehabilitation, drug treatment, counseling, and things like that. That's something that's a bigger picture goal for Pivot, is to kind of shift the way that society is looking at incarcerated women, because there is so much stigma that ends up following women for their whole life, and it takes such a toll on their children.
How did this project come about? What was the idea behind it?
Prior to Pivot, I had been working in a job readiness program with women, primarily focused on women who'd experienced homelessness. And what I found was when we had women who had a criminal background that came to our program, we weren't really equipped to help them. A lot of the resources out there were not willing to work with people who had criminal backgrounds. Employers were not interested in hiring them. Landlords weren't interested in renting to them. And when I went around Baltimore looking for other resources to refer these women to, they were very few. And those that did exist had very long wait lists or were more geared towards men. And there were such specific needs that women have. The majority of women who are incarcerated have suffered some kind of trauma or abuse at the hands of a male abuser. So when we look at putting a woman into a program that's mostly with other men, that's not necessarily the safest or best environment for her to heal. So through that realization and then meeting another woman, the co-founder of Pivot, through a Johns Hopkins social innovation event, we realized that we had both been seeing this need and wanted to see if we could create something to fill that gap in services.
What's her name?
So the co-founder is Bridget Nistico.
You yourself have a background in business. How does that affect your approach to this work?
It's been a really amazing opportunity to bring all of our skill sets together on Pivot, because I bring kind of that operational and systems focus and setting everything up from our like accounting stuff and getting all of our operations and procedures in place. So for me, it's really about being able to set a foundation for Pivot to grow and to be able to reach as many women as possible and to be kind of that behind-the-scenes ally who can navigate things like fundraising and just that business side of things to help us be sustainable and have the women be the ones whose voices are really elevated and whose stories are told.
How will you measure Pivot's success?
The success of the program will really be measured by the recidivism rate for our participants, so we want to see that go way down. The Baltimore City Police Department recently cited an 80% reoffense rate for people in Baltimore City, and we've seen that other reentry programs can get that rate down to less than 10%. So if Pivot can even have a small measure of the same type of success, we'll really see a huge reduction in the recidivism rate with our participants. So that's the obvious metric. And we'll also be tracking things like employment and quality of life.
Thanks for walking us through it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Thompson is one of 10 Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellows. Her project, for which she'll get an 18-month, $60,000 stipend, is called Pivot. It's a reentry program to assist women returning to Baltimore City from incarceration. After the break, we'll meet another OSI fellow who aims to improve the criminal justice system. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Some of the problems people encounter re-entering society from prison may stem from their situation as they enter the criminal justice system. In 2017, it's estimated 2 out of 5 clients of the Baltimore Public Defender's Office had been diagnosed with a mental illness. Yet few defense attorneys are trained to recognize or deal with clients with mental illness. Janae Gorwal, one of the Open Society Institute Baltimore's 2018 Community Fellows, intends to make a difference. Her project is called REMIND, which stands for Recognizing and Engaging Mental Health in Indigent Defense. She hopes to improve the representation of criminal defendants who experience mental health challenges by training defense attorneys to understand and communicate better in these situations. Like the 9 other fellows, Gorwal will receive $60,000 over the next 18 months to make REMIND reality.
OSI programs aim to better the lives of people in underserved communities by addressing injustice and finding solutions. Welcome to On the Record, Janae.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Sheila.
Where did the idea for this project come from?
Well, so I already have been interested in mental health for some years. I had a personal experience where I unexpectedly became a caregiver for a loved one with untreated mental illness when I was in college, and pursued a master's degree in public mental health at Johns Hopkins. And I became very much more aware of, A, the challenges that individuals who are experiencing mental health challenges and their families and communities face, and B, the incredibly vast intersection with the criminal justice system as I was studying and working in this space. As I sort of learned more and more about the enhanced vulnerabilities that people who encountered the criminal justice system would face if they had a mental health challenge and vice versa, I became interested in...
I'm not sure what the vice versa is in this case. I get the problems that somebody with a mental health challenge might have encountering the criminal justice system. What's the vice versa?
A person with encounters with the criminal justice system who might develop worse mental health problems as a result.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to uncouple those experiences for a lot of people because sometimes a person's first encounter with any kind of treatment or identification of a mental health problem is through the criminal justice system. And what I realized was that there was a lot more work to be done to understand the mechanisms that were working to put some people in a worse position than others. And I was seeing that so many people really had no choice in whether they or their loved one were subjected to that.
How did that translate into involvement with law professionals and the courts?
So last year, I had the opportunity to speak with staff at the Mental Health Division of the Office of the Public Defender. I was interested, actually, in just learning how I could support them in a research capacity. I'm a doctoral student in criminology and criminal justice. And one thing that really stuck out to me from the conversation was that these attorneys have provided training on kind of an ad hoc basis to other attorneys who practice, say, you know, in courtrooms throughout the state, and that the attorneys who get that training really welcome it and crave more resources to assist them in representing clients who are experiencing mental health challenges, but that there are a lot of resource limitations to getting that to be a universal training and resource. It also struck me that they estimated around 40%, as you mentioned, of clients having diagnoses of mental health problems. And when I thought about what that meant for the coverage of attorney training and the skills that those attorneys had in building relationships with and advocating for these clients, I thought it seemed like a very fixable problem.
So what is it that lawyers need to know? What will they learn in the kind of training that you're trying to put together?
First, a better understanding of what might be happening medically or emotionally for a person who's experiencing a mental health challenge, including as it would relate to, you know, the trauma of arrest and encountering the criminal justice system. Another would be understanding communication techniques that might be helpful at bridging what can often be a really challenging gap when, you know, a client is in a different state of mind. They are coming from a very challenging experience, and making sure that attorneys can sort of slow things down and get in control of building trust in those relationships by making sure they understand all of their options. Finally, teaching these attorneys who are working in, you know, criminal defense settings about how to be nimble and how to be informed, and how to give their clients the best options to hopefully reduce or eliminate sentencing.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellow Janae Gorwal about her project Remind, which will train defense attorneys to understand and communicate better when representing clients with mental health challenges. How will you recruit lawyers to the training?
So what I'm doing to start off is working directly with the agency.
Public Defender.
Yes, with the Office of the Public Defender, specifically in Baltimore City, as you've mentioned, and starting to talk to leadership about what their attorneys need, and then figuring out strategies about how best to make this resource accessible. The nice thing about starting where we would like to start, which is district court attorneys in Baltimore City, is there's about 40 to 50 attorneys, which I think is a manageable number.
Again, we're talking about the Public Defender's Office.
Yes, in the Public Defender's Office in Baltimore City, practicing in district courts. That is a set of attorneys who handle a large volume of cases. You know, the challenge won't be in reaching attorneys. It will rather be that we need to go deep and make sure that this is a really responsive training. I'm not really worried that the interest isn't there. These attorneys already have space. You know, they have very limited time, but they do have space dedicated to training and professional development.
And is your vision of this project totally focused on public defenders or defense lawyers more broadly?
What I would like to do is start with public defenders. And the reason is they encounter by far the highest volume of clients who are experiencing indigence. Those are, I would argue, some of the most vulnerable people who encounter the criminal justice system. And public defenders are also notoriously overburdened with more cases than they should have to handle to provide the kind of representation that their clients deserve and that they want to provide. So to me, the most impact that this project can have is by going to where the need is greatest. And so I would love to see Remind expand across different levels of practice of public defense before offering it to the private bar. Certainly, that is a place where we might consider going, but I'm very much focused on public defenders right now.
How will you know when you get going if it's successful?
What I hope to do is measure progress in a few different ways. I want to make sure that the quality of the training is very much intact and consistent. So we will be doing focus groups with attorneys to make sure that it's responsive for them, get their feedback. I would also like to measure, using the Maryland Judiciary Case Search, just a random sample at a few different times of sentencing severity and the amount of sentencing. So I'd say like the proportion of cases that are sentenced for clients who go through the public defender system in Baltimore City and in district court, and see if there is an impact. That would be a longer term measurement. Another thing I would like to do, I would like to get feedback from anonymously from public defender clients who self-identify as having mental health challenges. And we would have to do that very carefully to make sure that people feel comfortable and that there are no ethical concerns. But I'm very much committed to measuring the impact so that we know how to develop a very thoughtfully scalable program in a way that responds to where we're seeing the need to make changes.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Janae Gorwal is a 2018 Open Society Institute Baltimore Community Fellow. We've been talking about her project, Remind, Recognizing and Engaging Mental Health in Indigent Defense. She's using her fellowship to design ways to train defense attorneys to better understand and represent criminal defendants who experience mental health challenges. The OSI fellows each receive $60,000 over 18 months so they can focus full-time on their programs. We have a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.